This is the McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. I'm Kale McCann.
And I'm Jamie Morrow. We are professional dog trainers, members of Agility Team Canada, and together, we've been teaching dog agility for nearly 20 years.
Some nights after teaching classes, we'll spend hours talking about training, about our goals, and also some of the challenges we're facing and what we're going to do to conquer them.
And that's exactly what we're going to do in this podcast. Whether you're new to agility or competing at a world-class level, we're excited to have you listen in on our conversation.
So, let's head to the line.
Hello.
Hello.
And welcome to episode 4 of the After Class Podcast, also known as the P and the Podcast. For those of you who have no idea who what we're talking about, Jamie and I are besties, and we call each other P and Pod, and we thought it'd be funny to be calling the P and Podcast. It's stupid, we know. It's okay. We'll move on. Okay. Today's episode, we're psyched about because in terms of agility, puppy training is probably one of our favorite things.
Absolutely.
It's so fun.
And we both have puppies.
We both have puppies. And it seems to be a trend for us, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
This is like, what, round three?
Three.
Mm-hmm. Round three. So we have 13-year-old dogs. Well, her dog's a little bit younger. Repeat on mine, 13 and 12. And then we had litter mates.
Seven.
Border collies that are seven. And then Jamie has a seven-month-old puppy, and I have a almost five-month-old puppy being trained for totally different things now. But still, we're still dealing with the same stuff right now because we're not doing any agility quite yet.
That's right.
Anyways, we wanted to talk a little bit about puppy training, foundation training, raising puppies for agility. There's so many different aspects of this topic that we can talk about. So we actually want to do a bit of a series. So this is going to be part one, and we're going to be talking today specifically about things that we do with our puppies when they're like under 6 months. So we're talking like pre-agility training, basically. I shouldn't say that. We're training for agility, but I think what it looks like is
our focus
different than what most people. I think when people hear the word agility, they think like
tunnels
and like agility equipment or like wrapping cones or whatever. And we're going to be talking today about all the stuff like before that. So just to give you some context, we are agility coaches and competitors and things like that, but we're both professional dog trainers as well. And so we deal with, you know, basic dog training on the regular. And that's something that is really important to us because we know through years and years and years and years and years of doing this that the dogs who are the best at any sport are the dogs that are the most well-trained. Because the dogs and that person have a very different type of relationship. And they also have really good control. The dog has better problem-solving skills. You can see the difference between a dog who's had a lot of training. And we're not talking like formal obedience training. And if that's your jam, that's great. That's good to do too. But we're talking about just like basic. We're talking about basic training that
transfers over to agility.
And it makes a massive, 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 massive difference. And also, so we teach, we taught pre-COVID, we taught a ton of seminars. And one thing that we would often end up doing when we would travel is helping people with agility. But most of the time, we would end up helping them with a dog training issue because we're a little bit rare in the fact that we're agility trainers and dog trainers at the same time. People would say like, I've been going to seminars and like, I can never get the dog's toy out of my mouth, or like my dog keeps breaking the start line, or, you know, he works for a few minutes and then he like runs off and sniffs. Like, what do I do? That's all dog training. You know, my dog won't hold its contacts. That's dog training. It's not really an agility problem. It's a dog training problem. So knowing that when you have a puppy, you are preparing for
agility.
Yeah, for agility, keeping those basic skills in mind. So we're talking about like puppy stuff. You know, when we bring our puppies home, they are usually around like 8-9 weeks old, I would say. And so we're talking about 8-9 weeks all the way up to about 6 months, not perfectly in that category, but we're going to kind of stick to the baby stuff. And then in some of our other episodes, we're going to get into some of the other things if you have a puppy that's a bit older than that. So let's start off with sort of the three areas that we focus on when we first get our puppies home. That would be relationship. That would be control, like our basic control. And that would also be like socialization slash better word for socialization is exposure, because too many people think socialization means that your dog should just play with other dogs the whole time. And that's not what should happen.
Controlled.
Exposure is really what needs to happen. So let's talk a little bit about relationship first, because this is a big one. And I think that a lot of time the word relationship, it just like gets tossed out and like, what does that actually mean? And when you say like, oh, you really need to work on your relationship with your dog. Like if you didn't know anything about dogs, what would you think that that meant?
I'm not sure.
I know.
It's a hard question now because...
Because I think everybody thinks, well, I have a great relationship with my puppy. You know, he loves me.
Yeah.
But does he if he's in a room with like a bunch of other people? Or does he when there's like a leaf blowing over there? Or when he's tired and he wants to bite on
it's
your arm to let you...
It's a specific connection.
Yes. Yes, it's very, very different. So relationship is really, really big. And one of the things that we do with our puppies when we first bring them home for... months of their life is we keep them separated from our other dogs. And we'll talk a little bit more about this because some people are like, you what? Oh my God, that's crazy. They should live in the family. That's not what it is. They're like isolated or anything like that. But we do separate them. And I'll tell you one of the biggest reasons why. Dogs, puppies especially, they bond to other dogs very, very easily.
They gravitate towards them.
Yeah. And then if your puppy learns at a young age that like your older dog, or especially if you have other dogs in the house that like puppies,
that like to play,
mm-hmm. you then become a little bit less exciting. So
they're self-rewarding.
Yeah. We do a couple separations. So what are some of the separation things that you do with your dogs at home?
Well, my puppy's crated in my bedroom.
Yeah.
My dogs are not crated in my bedroom. They don't go out to the bathroom at the same time.
And that's something, the bedroom crating, that's something that you change later, right?
Eventually.
Yeah. So same with me. So right now, like if another dog sleeps in our room, like in our bed or whatever, the puppy will be in
a crate
beside me. Not everybody's into having the dogs in the bedroom, so to each his own. But I really love the whole sleep in a crate beside me, because that time
you know what's going on.
Yeah, you can say, hey, you need to stop barking, or okay, yes, you need to go outside. But also, yeah. I really enjoy like the routine of going to bed and then getting up in the morning. Does that sound so lame?
No, I
love that.
I have my bedtime routine.
Me too. You can already have, we have this thing that we do when we go to bed, and we have like our little process together. Mm. And again, that's a bonding time where it's just me and her, or me, her, and Ken, whatever it is. And it's a really great thing. And if the other dogs were around, well, she would just be focused on those other
Absolutely.
Dogs. Yeah. So the bed thing. Okay. And what was the other thing you just said? Going outside.
Yeah. Basically supervised with going to the bathroom, not going outside with the other dogs, not allowing playtime. Mm-hmm. Everything's a bit more controlled.
Yeah. And one of the reasons why we're hesitant to just let the puppy like go out with the other dogs right away is we haven't really trained the puppy to listen yet. So, you know, a recall is really important to us. We really want them to have a really stellar response to name, to come to us when we call them away from distractions. I mean, that's going to be helpful for life in general, but also in agility. So if you have a puppy and they're out and they're chasing the other dogs and they just forgetting that you exist, or sometimes they're irritating to the other dogs.
Yeah.
And like, that's not really fair to some of the older dogs. I have quite a few dogs, and some dogs could care less about the puppy. They don't even know that she's there. And then there's other dogs that are like a little bit like funky. She's 13 and like, she doesn't want upset. She doesn't want stress. And the last thing that she wants is the irritating puppy jumping
on her head.
And it is my responsibility as Funky's owner
to make sure, like, that doesn't happen.
Her biggest fan, exactly, that doesn't happen. Mm-hmm. So the separation is going to be really important. Now, obviously, eventually, we're like isolating our puppies from the other dogs.
It's all controlled. It's controlled.
Yeah. And we'll talk about how we start the integration and what we do there. But right now we want to, what we'll stick to right now is the whole relationship side of things. So sleeping beside our bed, controlling when they go outside. Also to, you know, if you're an agility trainer, agility handler listening to us, I would assume that you're crate training your dog. Your dog has to be crate trained to go to a competition. So crates are really important. But also the crate time is really important when you have a young puppy to control their freedom. So, and teaching them about like working, right? So,
and turning off.
And then turning off, because we often get high drive dogs. And I think today actually was one of the very first days that Euchre like laid down at my feet, like while I was in the kitchen, and like put her head down and like stayed there for like maybe 2 minutes.
That's a moment.
And I was like, oh, I was taking pictures of her and texting them to Ken upstairs. And I was like, look what's happening. Cause they don't know how to self-regulate a lot when they're young. So that's something that the crate can really help with. But the other thing that the crating does for relationship is it helps build drive. So when you have a young puppy, if they learn that when they come out of their crate, they're going to do stuff with you. So we come out and we do tricks. We come out and we play. We come out, we play tug. We come out, we do some chase. We do some really fun things together, and then you go away. So basically the puppy learns when I come out, the sun shines out of her ears, all these things, fun things happen. I'm exhausted. I need to nap. And then they can go back in their crate. And that's kind of how life is lived for a little while. And the amount of drive and focus that builds in a puppy is really, really important. Of course, you want to have your snuggle time and your hangout time and things like that as well. But those things are, we also would isolate from other dogs to keep that bond really tight.
And my training is not around the other dogs too, because I don't want them to be distracted by the other dogs. And then that's reinforcing because that's fun. And I don't want to have to be testing my recall and the dog doesn't come back. And then I wear that out as well.
Yeah. And keep in mind, when you have a baby puppy, it takes months to develop some of these things like response to name and recall and things like that. Like, you know, we have our young puppies out. One of the things that we really love to do are restraint recalls.
Love them.
Oh, favorite thing ever. They tire puppies out. But there's such a great way to teach the puppy to think and want to chase after you. So
Run fast.
One of us will hold the puppy. The other person will stand in front, dangle a toy, call our puppy's name, and then take off and run. And then we let the puppies chase, and it really builds drive for chasing and things like that. But it's also really good for, you know, obedient training, teaching them to come when they're called. But the other thing that's really nice about it is it teaches the dogs to kind of want to like find you. So we turned it into like hide and seek games with the puppies as well. We did a lot of that with Smooch when he was younger, and that was really fun, where I would hold him in the arena and Jamie would go, and we'd just start off by being close, like maybe 10 or 15 feet. She'd had like ducked down behind a tunnel or something and call him, and he would be like, where's my person? And then we'd play and have like these huge games, and then we'd catch you. But it really just teaches the dog to like seek you out a little bit more. And these are all things that build
and enhances your relationship. Yeah.
Absolutely. So relationship is really huge. Separation is really important, but I will be the first one to admit that the separation is...
That's hard work.
Grueling.
It's hard work.
It is so hard work. But we've done it over and over and over again, and we know that the impact on the bond and the focus that we get from a dog at a young age, like I'm normally can take a young dog into a classroom with other dogs, and it's not an issue because I've spent so much time working on building focus for me, and then obviously integrating the distractions in slowly and gradually so that you're always building on success. You're not going to like isolate your dog completely from distractions and then show up to class, you know, when they're 6 months and be like, okay, I'm here. And then your dog's like, whoa, what's this world? This is like way too much. So there's a gradual process. But I think that those types of separation things are really important. But I'm getting off topic. What I was talking about, what I wanted to talk about was the time. The time that it takes to do the socialization. Yes. And I think that's why a lot of people don't follow through with it, because they get lazy.
Especially if you have a multi-dog household and children and a full-time job. It is exhausting and it is hard. But you have to also remember that your puppy doesn't need the same time of exercising or mental stimulation as maybe your older dogs.
Yep.
They need it, but you know, a good 15 minutes of doing
can tire them out.
Trick training or doing restraints can go a long way.
Yeah. I find what really works well for my puppy is to do multiple little things a day for short periods, and then to put her away. And as she's gotten older, what I do with her has had to shift a little bit. She actually requires more exercise now at 5 months than she did at, you know, 4 months. Even like in the last month, things are very, very different. But also 5 months, I have more skills now. I have a response to name. I have a go and lie down. I have more training, which means when she's not crated and she's out and starting to integrate into some of the other things, she has more skills. Where when she was 13 weeks old and I would say, like, go and lie down in your bed, well, she knew that as a trick. She'd run over and then, like,
2 seconds, you know, and then off.
You're up and doing something. So you can't, like, use your skills. You're still developing those things at that point. So the time that it takes is a challenge for sure, but it really really is worth it. And then when it comes time to integrate your dog into, if you have a household with other dogs or kids or whatever it might be, do it slowly. I know one of my favorite
Pick a dog.
That's a good suggestion.
Pick a specific dog. I'm not sure that I would necessarily, depending on my dog, but the puppy that I have now, I wouldn't pick my other border collie. Mm-hmm. She's pretty high drive and she's very stimulating to my puppy. So I might pick one of my older dogs that isn't as interesting.
More chill.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's what I did. I would have Funky or one of the older dogs that just don't care. And I would have them like do a lie down in the kitchen and I would practice sits and downs beside her with the puppy. I do little let's go walking around and, you know, just get her comfortable. There's the dog. No jumping on the head. Like focus on me. Response to name. Just until the novelty wears off. And then, of course, there's lots of times where my puppy's been a puppy and she's been like, oh my God, other dogs, that's outstanding. Yay. And then but having the leash on and having some tools to redirect her focus back on me was a great way to kind of teach her to be in control. And then when I was able to bring her over to class, I would just stand
in an easy transition.
Yeah, I would just stand in the back of the classroom and just work, sit at my side. Well, she's done that behavior many times, millions of times at the house with very small distractions. And then it's just a little step up and a little step up and we can just start building on success rather than putting her in a situation where she takes off from me and chases a bunch of other dogs in class or she grabs a toy and she won't bring it back. Like all of these things.
They carry over.
Yeah, we train all of those things first before we put our dog into any type of agility class scenario. So that when they enter it, they have some skills underneath their belt and they like us. They really like us. Yeah. Because that's important. That goes a long way. So that's relationship. The other thing that we'll talk, we kind of touch on this a little bit, but is control. So, you know, having an obedience background, doing some obedience training is really important to the both of us because it really helps develop problem solving skills. It helps develop, a dog's ability to have self-control, which is massive.
Recover if they're wrong.
Recovery. Yep. That's a really good point too. I think
be more mindful.
Yeah. And respect, leadership, those types of things. We do a lot of, puppy training. So my family is a business called, McCann Professional Dog Trainers, and we help hundreds and thousands of students from all over the world. And I would say if we have puppy students, the biggest thing that people ask us about is nipping and biting. And to be honest with you, I can't really remember a dog that I've ever had that had nipping issues.
No.
And why?
The control, the obedience piece.
Yeah. And it's because they live such a life of strong but fair and fun leadership that they don't even think to nip and bite because how they're controlled on a daily basis, it exudes leadership. So I don't ever have to lay a hand on my dog. I don't ever have to be super crazy disciplined because I've already established respect by how I do everything else in terms of like how they come in and out of the crate, whether they have to bring the toy back, whether they can
impulse control. It's basically
all of that stuff. So, and I think so many people, they just don't know about how to do that. So they end up having a puppy that, barks obnoxiously and they can't get it to be quiet. There's
or they run around the area with their toy and they don't bring it back.
We're going to get into that.
Catch me if you can.
Our biggest pet peeve. Yeah. So the obedience and the focus is really, really important. We highly, highly encourage you if you're an agility person to get your dog into obedience classes, and it doesn't need to be
the agility piece will come naturally once you have that under your belt. Yeah.
Now there are a lot, and we'll get into this. There's lots of agility things that we do with our dogs at a young age that prepares them for the sport of agility. But from 8 weeks to 6 months, the main focus is control and building a relationship and teaching, learning a little bit about what
life
kind
skills.
Of dog that we have. Life skills. That's a
life
good
skills.
Name for an online course name.
Yeah, it is.
McCanndogs.com/link life skills. Everybody. Just kidding. Yeah. So, and then the other thing that, I said on the list there was socialization and exposure. And for us, we both have COVID puppies, and this one's been a bit more challenging than normal life, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I prefaced this before, but when we talk about socialization, we don't necessarily mean like
playtime.
Playtime with other dogs. Yeah. There are so many other ways to socialize your dog to teach them to be more worldly.
I think exposure. You use that word better. Yeah, because it's making them aware of
cheers. I forgot to mention that we're drinking wine because we're filming or we're recording tonight. So if you're wondering what the gulping and the glass clanking is,
clinking.
That's a clink. Uh-huh. Yeah. Anyways,
Ken will correct us.
Yes. Ken will correct us. What were you just saying?
Exposure.
Oh yes.
Yeah. It's basically what we're doing to socialize our puppies. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. It could be bringing them out into a town with busy traffic and mm-hmm. Getting used to the sounds of cars or big trucks. It could be exposing them to the other animals of the house and under control. It's not necessarily, you know, taking them off leash and having a huge playtime session.
Yeah. I think exposure too, there's a certain time when we would start to do that. For me, I try to make sure that my puppy has like at least their first two sets of vaccinations before I do that. But the second thing that I like to do is make sure that before I'm going to go out and expose my puppy to a bunch of things, that I have some tools under my belt that I can use to control the situation and to keep her happy and to keep her safe and to keep her under control. So for example, before I like go out and, you know, put her on the street with like other people. In fact, so she's not even 5 months. She's almost 5 months around there. Last week was the first time we ever walked around our neighborhood. And why I waited that long is because she didn't know how to walk on a loose leash perfectly yet. She's still not perfect now, but she at least has the tools. And I needed to figure out, you know, what treats were going to be helpful for me in that moment. Would she prefer to use a toy as a reward? Whatever. I needed to learn all of those things so that if I took her for a walk,
her most valuable reward.
Yeah, because what I don't want to do is expose her to a wonderful neighborhood walk and
she can't
have
handle
it be disaster the whole time, because that doesn't do much for our relationship or for our control. Another thing that was something that I had to work through in terms of exposure is being a border collie. She's highly, highly stimulated by cars. And so, you know, if I was to walk her here on this property, we live on a fairly busy street, 22 acres, so we're quite far from the street. But even with them at a distance, she's like, whoa,
interesting,
this is amazing. And again, if I was just to go out and expose her to the cars but not have any tools to teach her how to control herself around cars, that wouldn't be so good as well. So exposure is great, but you should make sure that you have a few go-to moves before you go out there. Like for us, we do a controlled sit at the side, teaching them to get in and sit on a loose leash. We would work already like on a tug and an out, or maybe like a hand tap, or a couple different go-to things that we can do to snap the dog out of whatever they're focused on and get them re-engaged with us. But those things need to be taught before you start to expose them to those types of scenarios, because exposures need to be good exposures.
You have to be able to have an out if it's not going well.
Yeah, absolutely. You've taken your puppy out, like down into the town, haven't you?
I have down into the town, but we worked up to that. I knew that he was pretty stim by motion, so I have two young kids that get on the school bus every day. So in the mornings, we would sit on the porch. The kids would go down to the driveway, jump on the school bus, and I would work some control sits just for a few seconds. And then back in the house we go. Yeah. And I would do that every day. And then that would develop into walking along the street and maybe going closer to the school bus. Mm-hmm. Because when the school bus stops, it makes a huge loud noise, which is kind of stim.
Screechy.
Yeah. And then, you know, we took it to downtown Dundas, and he was quite successful. I had moments, absolutely. And I had to kind of turn around and have short sessions and make sure that I had a handful of good treats that I knew would last for a while and pick my destination, turn around and make my way back to the car.
Yeah. I think it's also really important about like getting the dogs to see people, which has been a challenge with COVID, because obviously we can't really go up to people. Not that I really want to do that on a regular basis, really. But, you know, it's been really helpful for us to be around the hall because we can get close to the other instructors and be wearing masks and kind of be comfortable with like how they're going to interact with their dogs. But my puppy really hasn't greeted nearly as many people as any of my other puppies would at this age. Luckily she's pretty friendly and that hasn't really impacted her. But like if this was B, this would be horrible for her because she's a little bit more nervous in those scenarios. So she wasn't really getting used to that. But one of the things that we would normally do with our puppies, and this is like one of my favorite things about going to trials with young puppies, is the training at the trials.
Yes.
Like, you know, do your competition, put the competition dog away, get puppy out, get your tug toy, shove it in the back of your pants, take your favorite treats and get down there and work sits and walking and stays and hand taps and go and lie down and be calm. And
but there
like,
could be a progression. Maybe you're working outside, you know, of the facility and then eventually going inside, but that's not in, you know, one weekend of trialing. It's over time.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, obviously tough to do. So trying to be a bit creative on how you're exposing your puppy to different environments, basically.
Yeah. Moral of the story is get some good skills on your dog first that you can utilize so that when you are exposing them to new places, sounds, locations, people, whatever it might be, that you're able to do that, because it is really important with a young dog that they do have good experiences, because that helps to build their confidence. It helps to build their confidence in you as well, because it can be, you know, it can be challenging. If there's any less experienced people listening, you know, things like leash-free parks, things like that, we are not advocates of those types of places. You couldn't pay me $1 million to take my dog to a leash-free park. There's just
absolutely not
so many horror stories about, you know, poor things and bad things that happen there. But anyways, another topic for another day. The other reason why I don't like that, though, is that if my puppy doesn't really have a good recall or doesn't really listen well, and then you're going and letting it take off and play with other dogs and they just completely forget you exist, and then you can't call them back, and you gotta
it's being reinforced
herd them into the corner. Like, what do they need you for? Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. We'll talk about our little play dates that we've been having lately. Mm-hmm. When we get a little bit more into training, which we'll talk about very soon. But yeah, you know, if you have an opportunity with a friend or family member that has a dog that would be well matched to your puppy. So to give you an example, like her puppy is 7-8 months old and mine's 5. And it wasn't really until like this month that we could let our puppies play, because my puppy was so much smaller than yours, even though they're only a couple months apart, but she's bigger. And so now their play styles would be more similar. We didn't let them play before because we didn't know if like her puppy would overpower my puppy because of the size and the age. So, you know, sometimes you just don't want to pick any old dog. You gotta
match. It has match to be good match.
That's going to build your dog's, you know, confidence around other dogs. If you have a softie, that's incredibly important. But if you have a dog that can be a bit pushy, you don't want them to learn to be a bully as well. Mm-hmm. Okay. Next on the list is my favorite, and it's learning about their personality.
Oh.
And this is a good one, because all of this stuff that you're doing prior to getting into any of your agility training is learning a little bit about what type of dog that you have. And I'm not talking about breed and things like that. I'm talking about like what's up in the brain, what's happening up there.
Their personality.
Yeah, because, you know, getting to know what kind of dog you have
will help you with your skill development on how far to take things.
Mm-hmm. In our first couple episodes of this podcast, in our very first episode, we talked about like sensitive and dogs who lack confidence and how we deal with those things. And then in our second one, we talked about like high drive dogs, because Jamie and I have had both dogs and we've had to do things very differently. So when you have a young puppy, you want to kind of learn a little bit about their personality. How do they learn? How do they handle stress? How do they handle mistakes? You know, because knowing that is going to make a huge difference when you get into your agility training. You shouldn't be discovering all of that stuff once you start agility. However, things are going to come up.
Yeah, absolutely. But you should have a good idea of what they're about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think what have you learned about Smooch's personality so far, like going into agility?
That he has a very strong eye.
Yes.
He can be very stocky.
What kinds of things has he been doing for you to think that?
The way that he interacts with the toy.
Yeah.
So he will lock on to things.
I know these answers, by the way. Yeah. I'm just asking her provocatively so that she gives the answer to you guys. But yes.
the way that he locks onto the toy and will focus straight ahead. And it is very, very hard for him to turn his focus then onto me. So he does it, but then he does it slowly and then looks at me and then he knows that he's right. And then we have a big, you know, party for that.
Yeah. But I noticed the same thing with Euchre. She's comes from herding lines. And so when I've started to do toy work or things like that, or even if I have a toy in my hand and I say sit, she's like slowly lowers into a sit and drives me freaking bananas.
Yes.
So I've been working a lot on that. Or actually when she was really, really young and I would like go to offer a toy to her, I would so used to my other dogs like putting a toy out and what do you think the first thing they do is to grab it, or she would stand still and stare at it.
Yes.
And so one of the exercises that we do with our puppies when they're young is we do like a little bit of like rule outs or like like they have to kind of
pick or
show
choose.
Self-control. Yeah. And I actually couldn't do that with her because it was actually making the stalkiness worse.
Uh-huh.
Where like other dogs where you would like say, oh, and you got to pause and then you would hold the toy out and then release it when they don't try. With her, I literally had to put the toy out and immediately be like, get it. And I had to get her out of her head because she would go into the stalky mode. And I thought, oh, I don't like this. And, you know, I'm sure all the sheep herding people listening, I'm sure, I don't know, sheep herding people will be listening, but they're probably thinking, oh my God, you're probably wrecking her eye. But for agility, from my agility brain, that's not something that you want for our sport. You don't want that eye. It's not helpful.
No.
So it's important to recognize the stalkiness and get on top of it now so that we prevent some of those, you know, flanky, stalky behaviors that can impact their speed in a lot of ways in
contacts,
agility.
Yeah. I noticed it when I would pre-place a toy out in front of him and then go in and feed him with food.
Yes.
The way that he took food when a toy was present was very different. He would slowly open his mouth and I would place the piece of food in his mouth.
Oh my God.
And he would close it and slowly chew. So I had to kind of work things differently where I would use food or I would pick a toy that was a little bit more lower value.
Yeah.
To build up, you know, the focus on me more than the toy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The other thing that is good to learn about your dog when like your puppy while they're young is like their sensitivity level and
how they respond when they're wrong.
Yeah.
And is there something specific that you do to figure that out? I notice it in tricks.
Yes and no. I notice it in tricks, but I've also, like with Euchre, I've noticed it in like disciplinary stuff.
Oh, that too,
so like for her, if, like with Bee, who's like perfect child in my eyes, of course, but whatever, she's my dog. She was the type of dog that like, and she didn't really get overly worried about stuff. Like I wouldn't really call her a super soft, sensitive dog, but she is extremely biddable. So like if she does something wrong and you're like, hey, that's wrong or whatever I would do, like if it was like jumping up on the coffee table, for example, or all the things that puppies do, if I was to correct her for that and like move her with the long line or tell her not to do that or whatever it is, typically she wouldn't do it again because she's biddable and she wouldn't be worried about it. She just would be good. And she's the same thing with in agility. If she's wrong in agility and I'm like, nope, try it again, she lines herself back up and she's like, okay, send me. I freaking love that. With Euchre, though, I find I often have to tell her the same thing over and over again. Like she's not sensitive in that manner. Like she's a bit more like bullheaded and drives me freaking bananas sometimes, but it also reminds me, like, I think a dog like her, she will probably have more issues with, like, if she is, hopefully this is not the case, but if she does do agility and, like, she knocks bars or whatever, or she, like, runs into equipment, I can see her caring less than, like, what Bee would, because she's not impacted by those things. It doesn't bother her.
She just wants to keep going.
She's bred to herd sheep and get in there and, like, just not be wussy about things. Now, there's things about her personality that, because of that I absolutely love. Like, she's got a really cool personality. She's really, really neat. But there's some sensitivity stuff that I'm learning just through my everyday interaction with her that I think, like, huh, this would be really interesting to see, like, what would happen in agility with this. She can be sweet and soft and snuggly and cute and adorable, but she also can be a little bit more hard-headed than some of the other border collies that I've raised. So it's just so interesting.
I noticed it with trick training, with shaping.
Yeah.
when trying to shape something and it's not necessarily what I want, the franticness that comes behind it.
That gets higher.
Higher and higher and higher. And it's like, whoa, slow down for a second. Let me get my head because you're going like two steps ahead of me here.
Yeah.
So there is there's a little bit more of like a franticness about him.
And I think that's really cool. And obviously you're an experienced dog trainer. I'm an experienced dog trainer, but that's something that's really cool to notice about your dog like that early on in that type of thing, because you can actually start to teach your dog at that young age how to not get themselves worked into a frenzy, so that those conversations, if you want to call them that, conversations with your puppy can be had at 4, 5, 6 months old. And then when they're old enough to be actually out on equipment, they've learned a little bit about self-control. You're not having those. Like, how many times have we taught, agility classes or seminars, and like the dogs just get frantic and higher, and the people just keep sending them. And like, we start twitching because we're like, your dog is literally not
and that
even
makes you up
on this planet right now because you're not teaching
and that
them
transfers over to the handler
to
though
mindful.
Too.
Yeah. So those things can really be noticed when the puppies are young, just through training and things like that. And then you need to know about the personality, because that can help you to train them better. It can, know whether you need to be a bit more strict with this dog, or you need to be a little bit more forgiving with another dog like Funky and Wink, like we mentioned. They're a bit more sensitive, knowing, when to pick and choose battles with those types of dogs. But it's really important to know about the personality. And then
dogs need to be right more than wrong. Yeah. So knowing that about them.
Yeah. There are some things in your dog's personality that you won't be able to change, but there are absolutely things that you can fix by how you respond to them, by reinforcing other things, by not allowing them to get too stocky or whatever they do. You can highly influence those things if you know what you're dealing with, for sure. Absolutely. Okay, let's get into the fun stuff.
Okay.
Skills and training for the first few weeks. What skills do we focus on? So you get your puppy home. It's like the first, 3-4 weeks. What are some of the things that you would focus on first with your puppies in terms of training and with keeping agility in mind?
Retrieve.
Yep.
Tugging.
Yep.
Retrieve. That was a big one for me. And just small little area so the dog could be successful. Toy on a line. Dog on a line, really trying to increase the dog's drive to bringing the toy back.
Yeah. So this is, glad that Jamie said this first, because this is a big one for me. We know in agility that using toys can be really, really helpful. They're not the be-all end-all, though. You can train agility dogs without toys for sure. We're not the type of trainer that's like, your dog must like a toy. But
you use what works.
Yeah. But we do know that with Border Collie breed anyways, most of the time they're pretty toy motivated. But there's a lot of issues with toys in training.
Yes.
A lot of dogs who either they
self-reward
or they actually start with a pretty good toy drive, but then the person ruins it. Because they allow the dog to self-play with toys a lot. They give them access to a lot of toys. The dogs don't learn that a toy, like our dogs learn that tug toys
is a part of the relationship.
It equals us.
Yes.
It's not a self thing.
It's not independent.
No, it's a with us. But one of the ways that we teach them that is because whenever they're interacting with the tug toy, they're also interacting with us. Hence,
it's an extension.
James said the line on the dog, the line on the puppy, or the line on the toy. That way the puppy can't just go and play on their own. The other thing we try and do is build a lot of value for playing with us with the toy. So my like obsessive thing is I really like the dog to bring the toy. I'm over the top with it. But I like the puppy to learn to bring the toy and like push it in my hand and like really be really crazy about that. And I love that for a couple of reasons. Number one, it when you're training agility, there's nothing more irritating than when you throw the toy, give the reward to the dog, and then they do this big loop around the arena, and then you go to grab the toy and they pull away at the last second so you can't grab it. I hate that. Number one, it's a time waster.
Yes.
It exhausts your dog as well because they're running around. And also, try doing a seminar with a dog that does that. It's really...
Well, it monopolizes
the time. Yeah, it's difficult. So And also, it's not efficient. So toy work is really, really important, building drive for the toy, but also learning manners around the toy. So in our foundation training and all of our training, we do a lot of toy work where we pre-place toys in certain areas around the equipment to teach like head placement when they're jumping or running contacts or whatever it is. So we also do a lot of toy work where the dog needs to learn to not to touch the toy until
given permission.
Yeah. So there's all kinds of toy work that we do, and we train all of that from
the retrieve,
a puppy,
yeah,
right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So bringing the toy to the hands, really, really important. I know I worked that a lot with Euchre the first couple weeks home too. The other thing that I really like to focus on with my puppies at that age is like just starting with some of the basics in terms of like, this is so simple, but like sit down, stand, response to name,
mm-hmm.
Lots of like food luring, shaping, those types of things in those environments. And then making sure that when I do them, my dog's 99.999% successful. Hence circling back to like no other dogs in the room, like in
controlling the environment.
Puppy
basically.
Classes, we refer to this thing called like white room training. So when you have like a baby puppy who gets really distracted, like imagine yourself in a white room, like there's literally nothing in there, but like you to really build that engagement. And then you can start to like put one or two things in the room and then keep going from there.
Mm-hmm.
So the dog's more receptive. So yeah, starting with the basics are really important. The other thing that I'll focus a lot on is starting with like I start shaping pretty young. I know you do too.
Oh yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. And I actually really struggled with this most recent puppy with Euchre with shaping because she was not food motivated. So the shaping actually it was a really slow and like painful process really because she wasn't really that into the food. So, and it's difficult
to shape
with a toy until like they have some work. So that was a bit of a challenge. I kind of had to put some of that on hold until I could figure out the food thing, which we slowly worked through. But I would say normally shaping would be really, and for those of you who don't know what shaping is, basically it's capturing behavior. So instead of like putting food in the dog's nose and luring them, showing them what to do, you have food, but you wait for the dog to offer a behavior or an increment of a behavior. It might not even be the full one. And then you simply yes and reward, and then you reward little pieces until you develop whatever the whole skill is. And it could be very simple or it could be very complex as well. But it is amazing for problem solving with young dogs. It really turns them on to training and to learning and problem solving.
Yeah, I think I eventually, because he was so frantic with shaping, I ended up doing a bit of a mixture of shaping and luring together.
To keep the calmness, yes, to keep the balance.
So that he could be right more than wrong, because when he was incorrect with what I wanted, he would offer, you know, he'd go through his whole
repertoire
of tricks. And I'm like, okay, slow it down. So I would do that. I also did, and this is kind of trick training too, but like lots of body awareness tricks. So
yeah,
backing up so he can figure out, you know, how to work his back end,
yeah,
some perch work, sits to stands.
Yes.
Just, you know, different
coordination.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So he can figure out how his body works.
Yep. The other thing I'll do for agility. So all the things you just said are amazing suggestions. I'll also start to teach things like hand taps with a young puppy, because that builds into nose targets really easily, or foot targeting things, which leads into foot targets for agility training as well. I love a good hand.
Me too.
It really is useful for so many things in agility. So that's something that we'll start off really, really early as well. But then I also like to work on things like comfort of like going in and out of the crate. I know that's not agility related, but it's so important. You know, self-control, opening the door, making sure they're not just barging out. Yeah. So that they learn that as well. I would say, problem solving, body awareness, things that are appropriate for puppies at that age are all things that I work on. And then the biggest thing, and I know you're a huge advocate of this as well, is play.
Oh, yes.
Play.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot, this seems so simple, guys, but I cannot tell you how many people do not know how to play with their puppies in a way that actually is engaging. Eh? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was very Canadian of me.
Eh?
Yeah.
But that goes in with, you know, the other trainings that you're doing when the dog's successful. So into your restraint recalls, your retrieves, like all of those things when the dog's, you know, bringing their toy back, engaging in play with them with the tug and with the recall, engaging with play with them with the tug, like all of those things kind of go hand in hand for me.
Yeah. I think also too, like learning how to play with your puppy without even having a toy is also important.
Yes.
Because that also is a great way. Like I know initially when I would work on play with Euchre, and I started this when she was like 8, 9 weeks, 10 weeks old, she would bite me. Like, because she was like, this is freaking fun. And in the initial stages, I wasn't super strict about that. But then I was able to teach her that, like, you know, biting at my clothes or whatever, if I was going to be correcting her for that, would stop the game. And I would just stop the game. I would take her collar, tell her settle, and then we would try again. And she was like, okay, these types of things allow you to, you know, the play continues. These types of things teach the play to stop. That's also a great leadership lesson as well.
With the play, you also have to have a good understanding of what the dog enjoys in play.
Yeah,
so because true. So true. All dogs don't like the same thing.
No. There's lots of times where people will think that their dog doesn't like to play, but it's because they're not playing in the right way. And not every dog likes to play the same. So, no. You know, if one thing worked with a past dog, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to work with the new dog. You have to be really creative.
The slap and clap
usually works for a lot of dogs. Or with Hippie Shake, my little toy poodle, she liked the tickle, tickle, tickle. Mm-hmm. That would make her crazy. But yeah, being able to play with your dog is really, really important. That helps with the toy drive and all that stuff as well. But I think it just also is a great relationship builder for them. It teaches them rules, but it also just lets them know that they can let their hair down with you as well, and that you're going to be, you know, a lot of fun. The play is really, really important because it also increases drive, you know, when they get used to that crazy voice that you have when you start to play, and then you start to integrate that into your agility training. You know, there's so many times where, you know, how many times have we have conversation after class? This is very appropriate since this is the after class podcast.
Oh, cheers.
That we talk about students needing to be, how do I say this nicely? More fun.
Oh, more fun. Yeah.
Like, it's like I've had naps more fun than some people. Like, let's go.
Yeah.
And
relax, enjoy.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I think people just, they don't know how to let their hair down. And maybe sometimes there's a reason. Like, maybe they're worried that the dog won't listen.
Mm-hmm.
And
they get managed too crazy.
The dog's not going to. Well, that's another reason why you should work so much on the obedience. Because once my obedience established, I can be crazy. And my dog's like, yeah, babe, let's go. Like, this is fun. But if you expect to get a lot out of your dog, you got to put stuff into the, like, think about like teeter training and like things like that, that people start to do with your young dogs. And like, they're like, teeter.
And,
yes.
And that's what you get. Yeah. Snoozy magoozy.
Yeah.
The other thing though, too, is what I like to do with play is that sometimes I'll work some more control things. Like I like to teach my young dogs too, to go and lie down on a bed from early on. And obviously the duration of how long they're on a bed happens.
That's a great one.
Yeah. But then after they're on the bed, then I'll call them off and I'll, you know, have a little bit of a play session with them. And then, you know, then I'll make them settle and go back on a bed again to see if they can manage.
You come up,
and
you
then
go down.
Yeah. So I also, you know, mix it up. And obviously, as they get more skills under their belt, then it becomes a little bit easier for them. And there's more success, and the duration of how long they can be on the bed is much longer, too.
Yeah. As we were talking, I just remembered something that I forgot to say, or we forgot to say when we were talking about. It's just slipped my mind now. We'll have to come back to it. I forgot what I was going to say. It was about something about the personality.
Knowing their personality?
Mm-hmm. What was the thing that you just said? About the bed. Oh, I remember.
Oh. It's back.
What I was going to say about the personality is that knowing your dog's personality is also really helpful for knowing what types of things that you should be training them to do. Mm-hmm. So what I mean by that is that sometimes what happens is we get really excited about agility training and our dogs are like, and maybe this is maybe not appropriate because we're trying to keep things like under 6 months, but say like you're approaching like, you know, close to a year and you're like, okay, now I want to start doing like some agility things, and you start putting things together and the dogs are maybe a little bit more sensitive and soft, and you haven't really worked a lot on like play and tug and things like that, yet you're starting to do like sequencing, but the dog's like going really slow. But people look at what the dog's doing and they think that that is successful, but like we would look at it and be like, that dog's only giving 60%. Mm-hmm. And it's only giving 60% because the toy drive's missing, the play's missing, the confidence is missing, the personality's missing, the relationship's missing. All of these are missing. And that person is not reading the dog that they, the personality of dog that they have, and realize that that dog actually should be doing, working on play, or like three jumps in a straight line or whatever it might be. So knowing how to read your dog's personality and then train accordingly to the dog that you have. This is something I talked a lot about in the first episode when I refer to Funky, my oldest dog, who was really soft and sensitive. And I was doing all kinds of fancy shit because I was getting ready to, she's my world team dog. I wanted to go do big things. That was not the right thing for her. Thank God I figured it out and I dialed it back and just simplified things. But I see a lot of, like, often when I watch like Instagram scrolling through and I see young dogs like doing all these things, and like, yes, they're technically doing things correct, but like,
they're not giving it their all.
No, because they're not doing the right thing for that dog.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
She disagrees with me.
Yeah.
She disagrees with me. Yeah. I know I went off in a bit of a tangent there, but I think that that's really important thing to say about the whole, like, personality thing before we, like, totally go off it. Okay. Last but not least. Oh. This is a long one, James.
This is a long one.
Wow. I think we could go on forever about this. But the last thing that we want to talk about is, you know, what would we not do? What would we not do with our agility dogs that we're preparing for agility that are under 6 months?
I wouldn't let my, like, are you talking about the whole, like, are we going back to the separation piece?
Yeah. I mean, you could do that.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been letting, like we talked about at the beginning of this conversation about the whole playing with the other dogs. And if it is happening, it's under controlled situation, which we haven't really talked about what we did with our puppies.
Yeah. Let's talk about that now. Yeah. So one of the things that we've been trying to do lately is both of our dogs have gotten some fairly good basic skills on them so far, especially when it's just us with the puppy and no distractions around. There.
Rock stars.
They're amazing, which is great. And our dogs haven't had a lot of opportunity to play with other dogs as well. So we've been recently letting our dogs have little play dates, but they have been really controlled and they've been so, so good.
Mm-hmm. Pretty well matched.
Yeah. Too. For our puppies to learn about, you know, being mindful around other dogs, but then also using play as the reward for control.
Yep. So we'll allow them to play for a few minutes and then we'll separate them and we'll work some basic control.
And to separate them, we have one of the puppies on a long line so that we can step on it. And then we both tell the dogs to lie down, like, as we get close. And the puppies actually,
yeah, they did so really great good at that.
Mm-hmm. Laying down. And then once they're laying down, we separate them.
Yeah. And then we'll work on our own individually on some control stuff, but also doing some crazy things and tugging and playing. Controlled, though, with the dogs on a line so that they aren't leaving us and fleeing us to go visit each other again. And then we'll bring them back together. And once they're controlled and settled, then we'll reward them with another
go play. Yeah. And I think it is really helpful to have go play on a command so the dog just doesn't think they can leave you and play whenever they want to. There's actually permission. But I know when we first started it, like, we've only done it, what?
Twice times.
Twice. Now, even the last time that we got together in the early part of our training session, I had to go like 50 feet away from you because Euchre wouldn't tug. Mm-hmm. I was trying to get her to sit and trying to get her to tug, and she just kept whipping around and like staring at you and Smooch because she was so high. So I just kept pulling her further and further away until I got about 50 feet or so, and I was able to get like just a glimmer of connection from her. And then I was able to get her to tug. But what I think is important is the follow through in that moment, because mm-hmm. if I had tried and then been like, whatever, and then just let her go, that would have been such a horrible lesson for her to learn. But she needed to learn in that moment is you don't get to go and get that unless you choose me first. But I had to make it easier for her to choose me by moving further away and
control the environment, basically
making the tug a little bit more exciting. And then also too, like, we would get close and we wouldn't let them release until they were sitting on a loose leash and being focused and mindful. And I would say that the control part lasted much longer than the play part. Eh?
Yeah, absolutely. And then after, when we ended, the play session was over, then we both obviously clipped our leashes on and then worked some more control after.
We were training-nators that day.
We were. It was a great day.
Yeah, we decided, like, oh, we're doing so well, let's work our walking on leash now. So we both put the leashes on our puppies, and we went for a little walk around the parking lot with our dogs more tired, and they did really great.
But it was also nice to see them play and interact together because of COVID. Like, we haven't really had any real controlled puppy play.
Yeah.
So it was kind of nice to see how they played and what their personalities
were.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was really, really great. Another thing that I was thinking back to the things that we wouldn't let our puppies do or that we wouldn't do with our dogs, under 6 months, is I wouldn't really be too worried about agility equipment really at that point. There's a few things that I would do with my puppy being really young. I haven't done these with Euchre because she's not being raised as an agility dog, but I'm sure you've done this with Smooch. And what I normally would do is, as a young puppy, I would usually expose them to agility equipment like the wobble board or the teeter. It very, very small tip. Like, I would expose them to that as a puppy just to get them used to it, because usually puppies are more fearless, mm-hmm, because they don't think about
different
it.
Footing. So a plank, I did a plank where he just had to walk across a plank.
Sits down, spins, yep, back up.
A squishy
up.
Mat thing that he would kind of sit on, yep, and balance on.
I also shape my puppies at a really young age to go through the running box for running contacts because they're small, mm-hmm, and they fit in really easily. It's not super impactful because it's low and... it's not going to hurt them in any way. I don't do any wraps around cones and things like that. And I'll tell you, I did once, when Slam, who's, mm-hmm, 10 now, when he was a puppy, that was the thing that you did was like wraps and all of these things. It was like very common to be doing a lot of that stuff with, maybe not 6 months. I wasn't doing it that young, but I think sometimes people get so focused on the agility equipment that they start doing some of that stuff early. Mm-hmm. We wait to do tunnels. We wait to do a lot of those things because, yeah, number one, it's hard on their bodies. But number two, there's so many other things to do besides that. And also, if you teach them, the other thing that we do a lot is we teach a lot of like foundational work with the toy and the floor, like bypass exercises,
shadow handling,
following your chest. Because what then happens is, if your dog puppy knows all of those things, I've actually been doing some shadow handling with Euchre. She's pretty good at it.
That's good.
Just to tire her out and, yeah, keep her brain, even though she might not ever do it, and that's fine. But what's nice about it is they learn that stuff. They see it. So when you then say, hey, here's what a jump is, here's what a tunnel is, here's what a wrap is, they already know how to follow your shoulders. They already know how to leave a toy or go to a toy or bring a toy back. They know how to focus. We never talked about focus forward. That's another thing we do with our dogs really young, mm-hmm, is we teach them to stare ahead on command. Eventually, we lend that into equipment or for our weave pull training, running contact training. These are all things that we focus on at this age. We're not in a big rush to actually do agility because the actual equipment, it's not that hard to teach if you have done all of the stuff that you need to leading up to it, and then handling and putting things together. It's not that hard to do either if you do it individually and you teach it from the beginning ages. So if you have a dog that's under 6 months, don't worry about agility. There's so many things that you can do that has nothing to do with agility, yeah, equipment. The foundational things that you do at that age, and not even like the normal foundation things. Like, when I think foundation, often I think of like wrapping around cones and like that type of thing. But I wouldn't do any of that until after the 6 month stage, until, yeah, they're a little bit older. All of the relationship, control, focus, body awareness, thinking, problem
target.
Solving.
I do target work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of that stuff is what you could start off with your dogs when they're really, really young. I get people asking me all the time on my Instagram, I have a, 10-week-old lab puppy, and I want to do agility. What can I start with? Start with sit.
Yeah.
Start with response to name. Start with like
restraint recalls.
Yeah, recalls. Like, start with stop. How many agility dogs can you see that can't walk on a loose leash?
Yeah.
Start with those things, because at the end of the day, we can have all these hot shot agility dogs. Like, that's what we want too. But they're also your family pet. They're also, they have to integrate. You have to live with these dogs. You can have this high drive, like amazing agility dog, but at the end of the day, you also need to live with
agility
these dogs.
Is a small percent of what I do with my dogs. They, they live my life with my family, and they have to be able to integrate with my, yeah, kids and my other dogs. Yeah. So all of the beginning stuff is so important.
So important.
They need to have an off switch in the house.
Oh, yes. Yes, absolutely. That off switch is so important, and it takes time.
Mm-hmm.
And dogs under 6 months don't have an off switch, guys.
No.
It takes a while. James.
Yeah.
That was a good one. we could talk about puppies. It was so funny when we made our notes here. I was like, do we have enough here? Like, I didn't really write that many things down. And then it was not a problem. This was, I think, our longest episode yet. So if you're still with us, clink,
clink, clink.
Well, I'm glad that you're still with us. You know, if you have questions or comments about, you know, young dog training for agility, please let us know in the comments of wherever you're listening or watching, or whether wherever you've seen this, because we have a couple different ideas for episodes for young dog puppy training for foundation. But we would love to hear from you and see what you guys want to hear about, because we love the dog training stuff.
Especially puppies.
Especially puppies. All right, guys. Thanks for listening today. And we'll catch you in the next one.
Thanks for listening to our McCann Dogs Agility Podcast. If you'd like to learn more about us, check out the links in the show notes below. On that note, happy training.